Hey, welcome everybody to the Transportation Finance and Policy Division. It's Valentine's Day edition. Thank you very much for being here. We have a very exciting meeting planned related to electrification of our transportation infrastructure. And as soon as we have a quorum, we'll do the minutes. But as we don't yet, I will proceed with our testimony. Our format today will be public testimony on this topic. And we'll start off with brief presentations from three agencies that public agencies at the state level and regional level that have some jurisdiction over this issue, and then we'll get to general public testimony. We have a list. We have a published list. If you'd like to testify but aren't on the list, please let Mr. Howe, our committee administrator, know, and we'll put you on. And we have an hour and a half, so that should be a time to get through this, but we are going to make sure that everybody has a chance to testify, and therefore I'm going to ask everybody that signed up to be brief and to the point in your testimony. So with that, I'd like to start with our first person on our list, Frank Kolash from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And as Mr. Kolash is getting settled in, as a prelude to his presentation, I wanted to say that one of the reasons we're having this hearing and talking about electrification of the transportation system is that transportation now has eclipsed electric generation as the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the state of Minnesota, and is also the fastest growing source of greenhouse gas emissions. So if we are going to make a dent on climate, we are going to have to take seriously the implications and ramifications for the transportation sector. And so that's one of the purposes of our hearing today. And Mr. Kolash will give us the latest data that the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has on this topic. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Frank Kolash. I am manager of the Air Assessment Section for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. This section within the Pollution Control Agency is responsible for assembling the statewide greenhouse gas emission inventory and the report that we are required by the legislature to submit every 2 years. To begin, I'll go over just an overview of what greenhouse gas emissions look like in the state of Minnesota and how transportation emissions play into that overall framework. To begin from a very large scale, greenhouse gas emissions, 50% of our emissions in the state come from the burning of fossil fuels, and that includes fossil fuels used for the transportation sector, moving people and things around, and also within the electric generation sector, and also within the natural gas that we use to heat our homes and buildings and run industrial processes. And as the chair had said, in 2016 was the first year that we have seen overall that the transportation sector is now the largest greenhouse gas emission sector in the state, just slightly exceeding what electric generation sector looks like, even considering the imported emissions from electric generation. The reason that the Pollution Control Agency assembles this emissions information is because of the Next Generation Energy Act, which was adopted in 2007 and is represented in Minnesota Statutes 216H, and it establishes for the state progressive greenhouse gas emission reduction goals for the state with a 15% reduction target by 2015, a 30% reduction by 2025, and an 80% reduction by 2050. In 2015, the emission reductions that the state achieved were 5%, and so therefore we are not on track to meet the emission target goal for 2025, and that means that we need additional efforts to move sectors beyond the electric generation sector on a downward trend for emissions. Looking at what makes up the state's greenhouse gas emission inventory, this pie chart here shows that transportation and electric utility emissions are essentially the same on a per ton basis, transportation is slightly more than electric utility emissions, and these electric utility emissions also include the emissions that we have calculated from the import of electricity that is generated in another state but used in Minnesota. Looking more specifically at a chart that allows us to see what the trend over time looks like from 2005, you'll see here that the transportation sector on the far left has reduced 8% in its emissions since 2005. And again, it's the first on the chart because for in-state emissions, it's the largest source of in-state emissions. The next bar shows the significant progress that the electric generation sector has been able to achieve with a 29% reduction in 2016 from the emissions from 2005. And that's particularly due to the Renewable Energy Standard and the Electric Efficiency Standard that were passed as part of the Next Generation Energy Act. And then the next largest sector for emissions in Minnesota is the agricultural sector, which includes agriculture, forestry, and land use. And we had updated our mechanism for estimating these emissions, and we now include the amount of carbon stored in forests, and that's what's driving quite a bit of that variability that you see within the agricultural, forestry, and land use. And then the other sectors are important but smaller contributors to our greenhouse gas emissions, and some of those increases are due to increasing use of natural gas for space heating and process heating uses. So to look more specifically into what the transportation sector is broken out to, this pie chart has a number of different subsectors within it. I just wanted to present this, all of the sectors, to show that we have a very comprehensive emission inventory for the transportation sector. But what you will see is between heavy-duty trucks, passenger vehicles, these are the sedans, and then light-duty trucks, which are pickup trucks, vans, minivans, and SUVs and crossover utility vehicles. That accounts for more than 75% of the greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector. When you add aviation emissions into that, then we are approaching greater than 85% of the emissions in Minnesota coming from the types of mechanisms that we use to move people and things around the state. And this chart, I wanted to point out the important note for here is looking at just some of the important sectors over time. Since 2005, the orange bar there is the light-duty truck sector, and it has actually gone up in emissions since 2005. And this is due to Minnesota consumers choosing to purchase more pickup trucks, SUVs, crossover utility vehicles, which, while they are more efficient today than they were a decade ago or more, they are still less efficient than the passenger vehicles that they are replacing. And then the gray bar, you'll see that the passenger vehicle emissions are going down. And within these emissions, we also capture how the growth in vehicle miles traveled is also impacting these emissions. And this chart I wanted to show because it includes the vehicle miles traveled as the red line, and that in Minnesota continues to go up. And it continues to grow. We did see a plateau of vehicle miles traveled in Minnesota during the Great Recession, but that has now started to trend back upward, and we continue to see projections that vehicle miles traveled in Minnesota will continue to go up under a business-as-usual case. This chart also shows that we can reduce greenhouse gases and conventional air pollutants while also growing our economy, growing our population, and allowing for those vehicle miles travels to increase. This chart explains some data that we have assembled based on the way that the passenger fleet passenger vehicle fleet in Minnesota is changing. So these are for conventional pollutants, but they stand also for greenhouse gas emissions. That we now have 43% of our personal vehicle types are passenger cars, and 57% of our vehicles are the pickup trucks, SUVs, vans, and crossover utility vehicles, which, while they are cleaner than they were more than a decade ago, they still emit more greenhouse gas emissions and conventional air pollutants than the passenger vehicles. And then finally, the chair had mentioned a discussion about the opportunities for electric vehicle deployment and growth in Minnesota and how that may help emissions. And this chart shows an example of what an emission profile may look like for a vehicle run on gasoline versus run on what we consider Minnesota's average electric generation type, and then also what happens to the emissions when an electric vehicle is paired with some sort of green pricing structure, such as a wind source structure or a renewable energy source structure that leads to only very small emissions of fine particles from the vehicles. And then the final slide here is provided for your references. All of the information and data that we have are either contained in our greenhouse gas legislative report or the Air We Breathe legislative report, which we released in January of 2019. Also, all of the data that is included in the charts is available on our website for download or review, and we are also available for any questions that we have. And we also have developed maps for environmental justice concerns, because one issue with conventional air pollutants is that some people are more vulnerable to air pollutants, and that is especially true for air pollutants coming from motor vehicles. And with that, I will stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kolash. We do have a question from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a curiosity question on slide two. Your first point says the fossil fuel emissions are more than 50% of Minnesota greenhouse gas emissions. What's the other 50% generated from?
Mr. Kolash.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the other greenhouse gas emissions and sources are looking at methane and nitrous oxide, especially from agricultural operations and landfill operations and things that biodegrade and then release methane or nitrous oxide into the air.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. So what you're saying is that those are natural occurring increases of or releases of greenhouse gases, which means there is a normal tendency that just nature itself will create that. Do you know, as a follow-up question, what level of greenhouse gas emissions do we have to be before we start getting into a negative decline in overall impact of the greenhouse gases?
Mr. Kolash.
Mr. Chair, and to refine the discussion on the sources of nitrous oxide and methane and other carbon from soil types, those are influenced by human development and human use and human disturbances of those systems, and they do include emissions from things like animal agriculture. And to your question about whether the trajectory and the amount of greenhouse gases that we see before we start seeing a change, certainly the Next Generation Energy Act at the time that it was passed was based on scientific projections of the types of emission reductions that we needed to see, and those are similar, if not slightly less aggressive, than the type of emission reduction scenarios that we are seeing coming out of the International Panel on Climate Change, or the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and the EPA's National Climate Assessment, showing that we need to make significant emission reductions from all sectors in order to avoid the most serious implications of climate change, trying to keep the change in temperature below 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. And so to get to a projection of where we would see a changing of that, the 80% reduction by 2050 is within the realm of the types of reductions that we need to see.
Representative Petersburg, sure.
Thank you, because I think this debate is very worthwhile, so thank you, Mr. Chair. But the final question is, isn't there some debate now as to the benefits of CO2 in our air? I mean, plants require that in order to do photosynthesis and so forth, and certainly certain levels of it have been higher and lower in our history of this earth as well. So how do we determine what is the best level of CO2 for both providing for better plant growth as well as sustainability of our world, shall we say?
Mr. Kolash.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would classify that there is not an active debate about whether or not the growth of greenhouse gases due to the human release of greenhouse gases is problematic. Within the National Academy of Sciences, within in Britain, and the Royal Society, and many other scientific professional groups have recognized that human-caused climate change is real and problematic. And that what we are seeing is that the rapid rate of growth of CO2 in the atmosphere is problematic, and it is unprecedented on some of the geologic timescales that we're seeing. So what we have to do is to face the fact that the amount of CO2 that we are releasing is projected to cause problems, that we are already able to attribute changes in our climate to the emissions that we have had since the Industrial Revolution.
Thank you. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On slide 10, do the estimates for the CO2 and NOx for electric cars reflect the fact that most electric vehicles are charged at night when the base load is primarily nuclear and wind?
Mr. Kolesch.
Mr. Chair, what we're looking at within the average is we are looking at what the Minnesota average grid structure would look like, which would include the base load of nuclear being operated at night. We didn't time this to any particular time of day. We were trying to provide a broader level discussion. So it includes some coal, some natural gas, some wind, and some nuclear, and a very small amount of solar, based on what we project Minnesota's grid would look like. But there is some nuclear that would be included in that average estimate.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear,
Representative Elkin,
basically reflects an overall average mix of electricity generation, not necessarily what you would see if you looked at nighttime alone.
Mr. Chair, correct. To get into that level of analysis would require a much more complex analysis of the charging times, but we are participating in groups and regional groups that are looking at exactly those kinds of questions about how important the time of use for charging electric vehicles is and what kind of generation in the electric grid would be available to charge those, and also working with our state agency partners to come up with those kinds of analyses, because looking at the time of use of when a vehicle is charged is important to understand on a more precise basis the emissions. We were looking here at an average just to be able to provide some scale of potential comparison with a gasoline vehicle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Torkelson, give you the last question for Mr. Kolesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kolesch, for being with us today. Could you speak a little bit to the broader scale of where Minnesota fits in on a national or continental or even global perspective as to what our contribution is to this problem?
Mr. Chair, when we look at the types of emissions in Minnesota, we tend to see that, especially for pollutants like greenhouse gases, we tend to be how we fit into a general scale of the economy of the United States. So I think that we look at where we fit within those scopes. I'm hesitant to provide an exact percentage right now because I haven't looked at that exact question right now. But we do play into the broader economy of the United States, of the upper Midwest. And we are looking at the emissions from everyone and every state needing to come down, and we are putting these into the context of the Next Generation Energy Act, which is the current policy for the state of Minnesota to achieve greenhouse gas emission reductions by 2025 and 2050.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So you can't even give us a ballpark estimate of how we fit into the larger picture?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would prefer to bring you back that information. I would hesitate to give you a number that turned out to be quite wrong. I just don't have anything right off the top of my head that I've seen where we put it into that kind of context. I'd want to make sure that we could provide you with a reasonable number. So we will. I'll work with our staff and get a number for you.
So noted. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to that. And thank you very much, Mr. Kolesch, for your testimony. We do have a quorum present now. Thank you, members. And Representative Petersburg, I think there's a very slight technical change to the minutes to move. So,
yes, Mr. Chair, and I think it has to do with House File 635 on the back page where it says Representative Hornstein. It should say Representative Hornstein laid House File 635 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And with that change, I would approve the minutes of February 12th.
Okay, so members, we have the minutes as amended before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Petersburg. So we'll just try to move this along a little bit faster because we want to get to the public testimony. We have Tim Sexton from MnDOT, and then we'll have Brian Funk from Metro Transit after him. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Sexton. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim Sexton. I'm Chief Sustainability Officer for the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. So, climate change is already having major impacts in Minnesota, and these impacts are expected to increase in the future. More varied temperatures, precipitation levels, and the frequency of extreme weather events will stress the transportation system and increase the cost of building, operating, and maintaining transportation infrastructure and impact the way Minnesotans travel. The MnDOT originating statute 174.01 outlines the state's transportation system goals, including the goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the state's transportation sector and give highest priority to transportation modes with the greatest people-moving capacity and lowest long-term economic and environmental cost, alongside goals for safety, accessibility, and mobility. The people of Minnesota also see MnDOT as having a role in reducing the impacts of climate change. During extensive public outreach that was used to develop the state's 20-year statewide multimodal transportation plan, climate change was identified as a priority for stakeholders, with the majority of people agreeing that MnDOT should prepare infrastructure for climate change and reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. Within MnDOT, we have a group of senior leaders who have set agency policy and direction around sustainability, climate, health, and transportation. MnDOT annually produces a report with 30 key performance indicators around climate and transportation, including goals that we have established for reducing greenhouse gas emissions from the transportation sector, our state highway construction program, and our agency operations, including fuel consumption and building energy use. We also recognize the greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, climate impacts to the transportation system, and the connections between climate and health of the communities we serve is much bigger than any single agency or state government alone. We are grateful to have built partnerships with sister agencies and public and private sector partners in Minnesota and across the Midwest. For example, electric vehicles must be part of the climate solution to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. MnDOT partnered with the Pollution Control Agency and the Great Plains Institute on a collaborative effort with other state and local partners to create an electric vehicle visioning document that was released today. The document describes how the benefits of electric vehicles extend beyond just reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but can support state and local economies, increase efficiency in the electricity sector, support environmental justice and social equity, and improve air quality and public health. MnDOT also led coordination with the White House, state DOTs in Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan, and the City of Detroit to designate Interstate 94 as a federally recognized zero-emission vehicle corridor and support travel by electric vehicle across the upper Midwest through shared messaging and signage. Finally, this spring, MnDOT is partnering with the Department of Commerce, the Pollution Control Agency, and a philanthropic partner to identify options or pathways for the state to achieve the Next Generation Energy Act targets for the surface transportation sector. This effort will coordinate with external stakeholders and the public to get their input about how the state should move forward to achieve our climate goals. The official MnDOT vision is a multimodal transportation system that maximizes the health of people, the environment, and our economy. Promoting electric vehicles is one example of an approach that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions, benefit public health, and create economic opportunities by reducing people's exposure to pollution from vehicles, supporting utility investment in renewable energy, adding jobs in the manufacture and installation of electric vehicle charging equipment, and in most scenarios, provide more transportation revenue than an internal combustion engine vehicle because of higher purchase costs and the $75 electric vehicle registration fee. In closing, the state's latest greenhouse gas emissions inventory shows that transportation is now the number one source of carbon pollution in Minnesota. Transportation emissions are heading in the wrong direction, and there is an urgent need for action to align transportation emissions with our state's climate goals. Thank you for the opportunity today. The Minnesota Department of Transportation appreciates the opportunity to share some of our work and thoughts around transportation and climate. With that, I'm available for questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sexton, questions? Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I heard something. Maybe I misread it. our last testifier just said that we have increased, in the state of Minnesota, we have increased our miles traveled and yet reduced gases by 8%, and yet your testimony said we're going in the wrong direction. So I'm wondering, could you clarify that? Because I didn't understand that piece.
Sure. Mr. Sexton.
Chair, Representative. Yes, our 8% reduction between 2005 and 2016 was quite a bit short of the 15% target we had by that same date, and we are not in line to achieve our climate goals for 2025.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, but you can't take static the fact that we've already reduced, we've increased the number of miles traveled and so forth, and so the vehicles themselves become more efficient and less producing of gas. And so are you saying that you don't want people to drive as much in order to reduce that, or what? Because you can't say, okay, it's okay to drive more, but you still got to reduce at this level, when the reality is we wanted to make each vehicle a little bit more efficient and energy efficient, as less pollutant as well. I mean, is that not correct?
Mr. Sexton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I'm understanding your question correctly, there has been a decrease in transportation emissions due to more efficient vehicles. However, that decrease is not enough alone to get us to our climate goals. And right now, the current fuel efficiency standards are also being threatened right now by at the federal level, which would further make it even more difficult to achieve those climate targets for transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just sounds like maybe our goals are a little off yet at this point, so thank you.
Any further questions? Thanks so much for your testimony, Mr. Sexton. And then our last agency presentation briefly. Brian Funk from Metro Transit, welcome to the committee. And I did see Commissioner Green earlier, and I know that she's here. Good. I know that she has to testify at another committee, so it's all right. We'll have Commissioner Green next, if that'll work. And then we'll revert to our published agenda. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Funk, and please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Brian Funk. I am the Deputy Chief Operating Officer for the bus system at Metro Transit, responsible for our service delivery as well as the vehicles that we deploy on a daily basis. It's a real pleasure to be here to provide a brief update on Metro Transit's electric bus program. What you're looking at on this first slide, you're among the first to see our very first battery electric powered bus. This is a 60-foot articulated bus manufactured by New Flyer Industries, and it's the first electric bus manufactured at the St. Cloud plant just up I-94 from our offices in Minneapolis. Metro Transit is committed to introducing battery electric buses in our region. We have long been a leader in new and innovative technologies, and we have written this into policy plans at the council level, as Metro Transit is a operating division of the Metropolitan Council. Both the Thrive MSP and 2040 TPP include our vision, specifically outcomes of stewardship, equity, livability, and sustainability. It's estimated that the electric buses can save up to 100 metric tons of greenhouse gases annually at the tailpipe when we're providing our service. Further use of renewables can even offset and reduce the overall greenhouse gas emissions further. Finally, not everyone chooses to drive in the metro area. That's where we come in. And among those who do, not everyone will be able to afford electric vehicles. Metro Transit is here to provide additional electrified transportation on our buses in addition to the electric transportation we provide on light rail. A brief overview of our technology status and funding. Currently, the propulsion that's used for moving these large vehicles around is relatively new, but it's advancing rapidly. The batteries currently are able to propel a bus for between 100 and 150 miles. What we're seeking and what we need from the industry are batteries that are more in line with 200 to 250 miles. This prevents us from needing to purchase additional vehicles to deliver the same amount of service. During this time period where we're understanding the technology and some of the current limitations, we will have small diesel heaters on board to ensure that we have a consistent cabin temperature for our customers. And as the range increases, more and more of our service blocks will become suitable. As it sits today, I've included a few estimated costs for additional upfront capital. The big caveat with this is that we don't know yet what the entire life cycle costs are. We know that there are going to be some savings both in fuel and having stability in that market, as well as hopefully some maintenance activities. And so as we begin this pilot program and future procurements, life cycle costs will be key to understanding what the overall investment will be. Our initial purchase includes 8 battery electric buses to complement 6 diesel 60-foot buses on the C-Line. For those not familiar, the C-Line is going to be a second arterial bus rapid transit route between Brooklyn Center and downtown Minneapolis. It's on one of our highest ridership corridors. It includes a 17-mile round trip. And these electric buses will do a combination of charging strategies. We'll have overnight charging at our garage in Minneapolis next to Target Field, and we'll have 2 on-route chargers that are currently under construction at the Brooklyn Center Transit Center. Finally, we're going to take a smart approach to this. We've always been somebody who wants to continue to advance and learn. The measured approach will include purchasing additional 40-foot buses to test that in our local service environment, which will help us learn a little bit more. That's where the maximum number of buses are deployed at any given day today, and it's really going to help us gain a better understanding of what that operating range is, what future infrastructure requirements are, and how to best prepare our staff. We have a committed implementation team of mechanic technicians, operators from Amalgamated Transit Union who are super enthused to be able to learn a new skill set and be able to deliver that service to the region. Finally, as we look to expand our arterial bus rapid transit network, we intend on purchasing additional 60-foot electric buses for our fleet. And with that, I would be happy to stand for questions.
Question, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When are these buses, are all the buses charged off peak hours then?
Mr. Chair and Representative, so our strategy initially is going to be a combination approach. We'll be using the in-garage or the depot chargers for off-peak overnight charging. However, due to the amount of service that we're going to be providing on C-Line, we'll also be doing an on-route charging during all hours. What we think in a limited application like this, it'll help us understand what the expenses are, what some of the limitations are, so we can factor that into longer-term strategies.
Representative Cagle.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I was just also curious about what the source of the power will be, if there's any plans for solar panels to, you know, create your own power for the charging of those buses.
Right. Mr. Funk.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we have a partnership with Xcel Energy, and Xcel Energy has come to the table, and they're really wanting to understand with us what it looks like to charge large vehicles like this in our facilities. And so we're working hand-in-hand with them, and last year the council partnered with Xcel Energy for a green partnership agreement, which continues to work towards more use of renewables. And so we're going to learn as we go a little bit of this, but we're keeping our eyes open, looking for opportunities where we can make the most use of those renewable energies, as well as start to look towards what we might be able to do for battery storage at our facilities, so we're able to make use of storing electricity during off-peak times when it's cheaper to acquire, and then use that for charging our buses midday if that's essential.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to take Representative Runbeck. Was there Representative Hausman? You had a question? Okay, I'm going to take Representative Runbeck, then Representative Hausman, and then we're going to go right to Commissioner Green so we can get to the public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Funk, I think I heard you say that the current buses available have a range of 100 miles with the current battery power. Is that correct? And
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's correct. So the buses that we're receiving delivery of now, estimated range is between 100 and 150 miles.
And your desired, Mr. Chair, the desired range would be more like 200. I'm curious how many buses you'll be purchasing that don't quite fit the parameters that you're looking for. And are we in an official test period, I mean, where there's reporting and the legislature can know what you're finding out?
Right. Mr. Chair and Representative, so on both fronts, we're purchasing these buses as a pilot program, in part funded by a 2017 federal low and no emission grant program that was able to cover the vast majority of the increased expense to purchase our initial battery electric buses and charging infrastructure. So that's helped to offset it, and we're smartly looking towards what we're able to purchase in the future, make use of that charging infrastructure for on-route opportunity charging where we can, but not to get too far out ahead of where the industry is at. And then the second question on the reporting period, we've committed to our board at the Metropolitan Council that as we are collecting data that we'll be providing those quarterly reports, and so my understanding is we can work through that with the council to provide information as necessary.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hausman, and then a very brief question for Representative Tabke, and then we'll have Commissioner Green. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The in addition to the conversion to electric buses, I'm assuming then that on the page 2, the needs and benefits supports 2040 transportation policy plan, that you're also making a vigorous attempt to for more transit investment, meaning move away from cars and to buses as another point.
Mr. Fun.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I would say that that's accurate. We believe that this is an overall good strategy. You know, for today, the technology-wise, we believe electric buses provides a really good long-term benefit, provided that all the technology proves that it's suitable to provide that reliable, dependable service. But we want to continue to expand our networks that we're able to make use of these large vehicles to carry large groups of people.
And Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, I'm assuming that both Metro Transit and MnDOT, just given their presentations, are making a case to the governor, and so I'll await with interest what we see on his proposal next week for both transit and passenger rail.
Yes, we certainly await with curiosity and interest. Thank you very much. We have one very quick final question from Representative Tadfee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Funk, really quickly here, as battery technology improves, are you able to swap out new battery technology in the existing buses that you're going to purchase in order to extend that range as the technology improves?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so that has been one of our leading questions with the bus manufacturer's battery, is that are the batteries of the future going to be able to be inserted in the buses we're buying today? Everybody's interested in that, all transit agencies, and so it's highly likely, although we'll see how it materializes, but it's definitely a strategy that we're aiming towards.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Great. So thank you, members. We will, as Commissioner Green is coming up, she stepped out. Okay. We will get to her after, but after we have our next testifier, Jukka Kukkonen. And just for those of you testifying, we have roughly about 2.5-3 minutes each for all of you, so hopefully you can keep it in those parameters, and so we can make sure that everybody who signed up has a chance to testify. Okay. Welcome to the committee. It's great to see you. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jukka Kukkonen, and my company is Plug-in Connect. I work as an EV market consultant here in Minnesota, and I work with wide variety of audiences here trying to provide good information about electric cars and electric transportation for people. We've already heard that how important transportation and electrification is for our future, but let's look at what's happening right now in the market. In general, the EV market has seen really good growth in the last years in the U.S. In 2018, plug-in vehicle market increased by 80%, with record sales of 360,000 vehicles in 2018. Electric vehicles took 2.1% market share of light-duty vehicle sales in the U.S. We are seeing much faster growth in some of the areas. In China, the market is almost double than what we see here. One example from U.S., California is over 10% already. And example from Europe, Norway, last year, over 50% of the vehicles sold in Norway were electric. So this is happening fast in many places. Unfortunately, Minnesota, we are trailing behind here, having plug-in vehicle market share of just over 1%. To learn what's causing this, let's dissect it a bit. If you look at the 2018 graph of the vehicle sales data, you can see the last graph there. You can see that most of the growth last year was produced by one manufacturer, Tesla. Tesla really showed last year that there is a demand for EVs. Since September, Tesla Model 3 was every month among five most sold passenger cars in the U.S. In some months, they sold more Tesla Model 3s than Toyota dealers sold Corollas. So why did Tesla dominate this market segment last year? Is it because all the other 23 models from other manufacturers have such a short range that people are not buying them? Well, I don't really think so. If you look at the list of the vehicles that you should have in front of you there, that's the list of cars that are available here in Minnesota. In our family, we've been driving electric cars since 2012. We got our first Nissan Leaf that year, and 2012, that car got only 73 miles of range. Now, if you look at what's right now, the range is in this document, there's a list of total range in the middle of there, total range and miles. And if you look at that, there's not a single vehicle that gets under 100 miles there. Actually, the shortest range now is in Nissan Leaf, and that's 151 miles. So it has over doubled since 2012, and this is the same kind of development we can expect to see in buses and other things too. So range is not really a problem anymore as it used to be, but we have to definitely talk with people about it and tell more, provide information about it. So if range is not an issue, how about the charging infrastructure then? Many organizations have done a lot of work in this area. According to the DOE, Minnesota right now has 327 public locations with 808 stations. We also have to remember that 85% of charging happens at home. My wife, for example, has done all her driving with an EV for the last 6 years, and she has not used a public charging station a single time. So she just charges at home overnight because that is the cheapest and most convenient way to power your car. This is not to say that we don't need more public charging stations, especially for corridor charging on the highways in outstate Minnesota, so that people can travel long distances. But this is not the reason why manufacturers couldn't be successful in Minnesota selling plug-in vehicles. So driving range is not an issue. Neither I don't see the public charging is a limiting factor for the sales. What is the problem? Well, we clearly need more education, but the biggest challenge lies elsewhere. Traditionally, auto manufacturers have said in the past that there isn't much customer demand, but Tesla clearly has proved that wrong last year with Tesla Model 3. As part of my work with utility companies, last year I visited 90 auto dealers. I also trained 200 other salespeople on how to sell plug-in vehicles. Through these discussions, it has become very clear to me that our biggest challenge here in Minnesota is that auto manufacturers are not providing enough vehicles for dealers to sell. Overall, there are about 45 plug-in vehicle models in the U.S., and out of those, manufacturers offer just 26 models in Minnesota.
Mr. Kukkonen, can you wrap up?
Yes, I'll finish with this.
Thank you. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So we have less models to choose from, but on top of the manufacturers don't allocate nearly enough units to Minnesota. Dealers in most cases are just getting a couple units per month. As we know, dealers will sell what is on their lot today, and if they don't have EVs on their lot, they can't sell them. For this same reason, they can't also market them, and if we don't market them, general public will not show up to ask for them, so they of course see very little demand. This self-fulfilling prophecy definitely doesn't work well for Minnesotans, and I see this lack of units the biggest barrier for robust EV growth. We are treated like flyover state, and that needs to change. So I recommend let's be more proactive in this one. Let's make Minnesota, if not leader of this change, at least above average.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Kukkonen. Members, if you could keep your questions extremely brief, getting a little worried about the number of testifiers we have and the time we have. So quickly,
no question,
Representative
just an observation that certainly poverty is another issue of people who can simply not afford this product.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, the good news is that when cars age, they become cheaper. So used cars available for about $10,000 now as EVs. So more new cars are sold, more used cars will have available for the market, and that way people who don't have the means to buy new cars can buy the used cars at that point.
Thank you for that response and for your question, Representative Hausman. So thank you for your work and your insights. It's very appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Members, we do now have Commissioner Green. And Mr. Howe is going to be beginning now, letting folks know a two-minute warning and I believe a 30-second warning so that people can organize their testimony so that we can stay within our time limits. So welcome. We have the chairperson of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners and my county commissioner, and former representative, Marion Green. Welcome, welcome to the committee, and welcome back to the state office building.
Thank you so much for that warm welcome. Good afternoon. My name is Marion Green. I'm a county commissioner and chair of the Hennepin County Board, and I wanted to say that it is a delight to be here back at the Minnesota House with this august and esteemed group of public servants. So nice to see you all. I'm here to share the experience of one county vis-a-vis the adoption of electric vehicles and fleet management. About a year and a half ago, my office started to do research on electric vehicles for the Hennepin County fleet, which, by the way, after the state fleet of vehicles, is the largest fleet in government in Minnesota. I drive an electric car, and after experiencing the enormous cost savings, and I'd be happy to talk about that too, cost savings to my family, I thought the county ought to benefit and should consider this money-saving choice, especially in light of the environmental benefits and trajectory of battery technology. In January 2018, the county board asked staff to continue my initial research, and what staff quite quickly ascertained was that not only does it likely make sense to convert our light-duty fleet to electric, but it also makes sense to greatly reduce our fleet size significantly on the order of 50% and partner with car share and ride share services like Our Car and Lyft. This is a space that's evolving, and this was a time for us to evolve to match what's going on in the marketplace. This year, the research is being fine-tuned to examine travel needs specific to the county to determine where to station cars and charging stations based on the travel needs of county employees. And next year, I anticipate we'll start the shift to electric vehicles, likely first off by not replacing our fossil fuel cars as they age out. One final comment I'd like to make about electric vehicles is that they are remarkably normal. They look and largely feel like what we currently call a regular car. Because of the ways that motors work, they actually have a little more pep as energy goes straight to the axle with fewer transfers that happen in gas engines. So with that, I'm happy to stand for some questions, and I think you all have a Star Tribune article that was about the shift and some of the conversation around that.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Green, and thanks to Hennepin County for your work on this. I hope other local units of government will get involved, too. So, Representative Runbeck, sure.
Just a quick question for sort of a baseline understanding of cost differential. So 10 cars that are electric versus 10 cars that in the normal fleet, what's the difference in cost, roughly?
Well, it depends on if you take the cost in, like, the moment of purchase or the life cycle of the vehicle. So over time, the difference, I actually would ask one of your other testifiers to give you that exact difference, but over time, electric vehicles are cheaper.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony. Really appreciate it. No
thank
other
you.
Questions? Good.
Nice to see you all.
Okay. Thank you. So our next testifier is Brendan Jordan from Drive Electric Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute. I represent Drive Electric Minnesota, and I have my own timer running here, so I will really work at keeping within the 2 minutes. Drive Electric Minnesota is a statewide partnership representing the EV industry in the state, including utilities, rural electric co-ops, auto dealers, automakers, charging companies, state and local government, and a wide variety of environmental and public health organizations. What I would like to emphasize here is that EVs are a statewide opportunity. They offer benefits for consumers throughout the state through cleaner air. It offers benefit to consumers through lower total cost of ownership in many cases, through a great driving experience. I would just like to highlight here in your packets, you have a map that shows EV registrations throughout the state. The point here is that while we do expect more EVs in the metro area because there are more people there, wherever you're located in the state, you're going to start having EV owners in your district. And so I just would like to really briefly highlight a few opportunities. This is a new technology, and it's often the case that new technologies receive some catalytic support in the form of public investment and public-private partnership. You have a handout here highlighting some opportunities that Drive Electric Minnesota has identified where the state could support the development of this industry. I do not have time remaining to go over all of these items, but I would be more than happy to take some questions from members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a good question, because as we are getting now towards kind of the end of the lifespan of some of the earlier electric cars, do you have any idea on if there's any additional cost for recycling those vehicles, especially with the batteries? Because I know batteries are an issue that we have to deal with.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a great question. The reality is that very few batteries have had to go back, but I believe that the plan is to recycle those batteries. I know there's a lot of work developing second life applications for automotive batteries, so you might have an automotive battery that has 50% of its life left. Not so useful in a car at that point, but it might be very useful to be stacked up and used as stationary storage to provide backup for the electric power grid.
Thank you. Thanks for the question and good answer. Any other questions? Good. Thank you very much for coming, and thanks for your good work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our next testifier is Diana McEwen from the Great Plains Institute. Wonderful to see you, and welcome to the committee.
Do you have a PowerPoint?
Looks like we have
Diana
technical
McEwen.
Issue. So thank you, and yes, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair. Diana McEwen. I'm with the Great Plains Institute and spend most of my time directing the metro region of a program called CERTS, Clean Energy Resource Teams. So Great Plains Institute, I won't talk about it because my colleague just did. Clean Energy Resource Teams were a statewide program run by a partnership, and we work to connect individuals with resources to do clean energy projects at the very local level. So I'm here to talk about a program or a project called Cities Charging Ahead. It is a collaborative of 28 cities across the state working together to learn and act on becoming EV or electric vehicle ready communities. This project has been funded by a number of sources, including a partnership with Xcel Energy in line with their long-term goals on electric transportation. The main focus of the goals for this project are to look at including electric vehicles on the city fleets, providing public charging infrastructure in those communities, and guidance to private developments as they build to make sure that they're EV ready. There is a number of desired outcomes as part of this project, which started about a year ago, and it's run by Great Plains Institute and CERTS statewide. We have a structure where we meet every other month with regional cohorts. There's a Northeast, a Metro, and a Southeast cohort. We have in-person meetings, about three-hour-long meetings every other month. Some of these cities have to drive an hour and a half. They're pretty dedicated to make this commitment. And we have educational webinars quarterly as well. These are the cities. There are 28 cities. They are all over the state. There's a little bit of a gap in Southwest Minnesota, but other than that, they're pretty widespread considering, and very excited to work with them. And I'd say that the Northeast cohort and the Southeast cohort especially is very, very engaged and really excited to be working on these projects. A number of cities are you know, looking at fleet studies, installing charging infrastructure. They are, you know, really looking at opportunities to guide development. They're taking action. It's been really exciting to see as we move forward. We are developing, as part of this process, tools and resources to help the next group of cities, hopefully not just 28, but 280, 2,800, however many, to learn from this process and put forward the guides and tools that cities need to not recreate the wheel and learn from what we've learned as a cohort together of cities. I'll stop there and see if there are any questions.
Thank you very much,
yeah.
Ms. McEwen. Any questions for Ms. McEwen? Well, this was an excellent PowerPoint. You did a great job of getting through it quickly and efficiently, so we appreciate that. But definitely, members, take a look at this, and I think particularly the depth and breadth statewide of the participating cities is very impressive.
And, Chair, we do have, because of the interest of cities and other cities, we have a big spring event coming up at the end of March, and I'll send invitations to you all. It'll be here in St. Paul where you can come and hear more about what our next steps are and where we're going with this, because there's a lot of interest.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Our next testifier is Robin Hutchison from the City of Minneapolis Public Works.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robin Hutchison. I'm the Director of Public Works for the City of Minneapolis. There is no part of the work we do in public works that's not either impacted by climate or becomes a proactive strategy to reduce its effects. I'm going to start in an unlikely place, which is not in transportation, which is in flooding. It's one of our most pressing issues, and it's in every community in the state. In the city alone, there's over 150 known flooding areas. It will cost between $10 million and $70 million to fix these areas. This is really a back-end solution to the effects of climate. The low-hanging fruit is in the proactive approaches to climate. The low-hanging fruit is transportation. So the rest of my minute and 45 seconds, I'm going to focus on transportation here. We have the same goal as the state. As a city, we want to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2050. We are all in this together. Over 90% of passenger miles in Minneapolis is in personal automobiles. To reach that goal, we're going to have to reduce it by 38%. That's a big lift. So here's what we're working on, and we're doing this together in partnership, and our local actions support regional and statewide goals. So first, we are updating the city's transportation action plan with a focus on climate. We have to make it more appealing for people to make different choices. We cannot rely on simple behavior change. Our system and our network has got to improve. One way we're doing that is writing a whole new chapter on transit. Transit should be more reliable. Transit should be all day. Transit should serve multiple populations, both commuter as well as internal to the city, and it should be electric. We are very excited to partner with Metro Transit on the electrification of the C line, and we can't wait to see what those expansion plans look like. A second area that we're working is on in implementing up to 35 mobility hubs across the city. A mobility hub is a place where someone may find a number of choices to travel, including bikes, scooters, cars, and these will be located near transit routes. We'll be hoping to install up to 35, and each one of these will be electrified. So the transportation options that we are providing to our residents and visitors will be electric. Lastly, we're making internal changes to the city. We're updating the city's fleet. We are installing about 75 stations where our own fleet can plug in. We're also looking at ways to expand this to the public even beyond those mobility hubs. And again, doing this in partnership with so many, including Xcel Energy. I want to thank the chair and the committee for the opportunity to speak on something that is so important and at the forefront of my work, and I know also yours.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hutchison. And we have a question from Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hutchison, it was a pleasure to serve on the governor's task force on connected and automated vehicles. I really appreciate the perspective you brought and being innovative and progressive and putting people at the forefront and how we're going to use transportation to serve people not just about moving cars and building concrete faster. So I thank you for that, and it is a breath of fresh air, and the focus on equity that our transportation system is for all. I thank you for that, and I appreciate you being leaders in our state on that.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi, and thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Hutchinson, any other questions? Yes, Representative Rundeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wonder if we could ask just sort of, are there cost parameters or budget parameters that you're working within when you lay out the plans?
Mr. Chair and Representative, there are always cost parameters, and we have to make trade-offs in all of the work that we do. We seek partnerships to help offset. As you've heard today, there are so many with similar and overlapping goals that by working together, we can hopefully reduce the cost for any one individual organization.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much
for coming, and appreciate your work. Our next testifier is Amber Backus from the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Backus.
Please. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm with the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and represent its 373 franchise new car and truck dealers across the state of Minnesota. And I wanted to spend a few moments discussing consumer trends and how they impact the sale of EVs in Minnesota. While there are more plug-in models available than ever before, EVs comprised approximately 0.2% of the vehicles registered in Minnesota in 2017. And there are three factors that impact the slow uptake: utility, price, and range. According to Deloitte's Global Automotive Consumer Study, which they do sometimes annually, sometimes biannually, and I'll reference this throughout my testimony, the most important factor that influences the type of vehicle a consumer buys is its utility, or how its functionality fits a consumer's lifestyle. We've seen that borne out in Minnesota with Ford F-150 and Chevy Silverado pickups, the top-selling vehicles year after year, and sales of crossovers, SUVs, and light-duty trucks accounting for 80% of annual vehicle sales. Minnesotans want the towing capacity to haul their boats and recreational vehicles. They need the third row to carpool their kids to sporting events, and they want all-wheel drive for winter commuting. Unfortunately, the EV options available to them are limited. There are no pickups yet. A handful of crossovers or SUVs are available, and only four vehicles have any towing capacity, which is limited to 5,000 pounds. With EVs on average 10,000 to 15,000 more than the comparable conventional vehicle, the upfront costs of ownership are a deterrent. Consumer interest in purchasing alternative powertrains is growing, but the Deloitte survey also points to the fact that consumers don't want to pay a lot more to have them up front, with most respondents preferring a price bump of no more than $300 to $2,000 to the technology. And lastly, while the driving range of electric vehicles is increasing every year, it is not caught up to the mileage that you can get on a full tank of gas, leaving consumers nervous about their options when traveling beyond their regular commute. To help overcome this anxiety, MADA has been working with our partners in Drive Electric Minnesota to address these issues. Brendan gave you the handout, but we strongly support the state instituting a tax credit or rebate to get Minnesotans into cleaner vehicles and help drive demand for the market, leading to lower vehicle costs. States that have provided incentives to purchase cleaner EVs have seen sales of 2 to 4 times the national average. We also support the expansion of charging, but I want to say we're most proud of the work that we do at the Twin Cities Auto Show to educate consumers about electric vehicles and give them exposure to the technology. 2019 will be the fourth year the show has hosted the Electric Room. It will feature a range of EVs as well as owners and utility reps to explain the logistics of ownership and how to charge. And at this year's show, we'll be giving away a Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid to showcase the first non-luxury electric crossover available in the Minnesota market. So hopefully this exposure, as well as test drives available of that vehicle and lease, will help us gain exposure and get more Minnesotans understanding and not be so nervous about them. And with that, I thank you for allowing me to plug in today to this conversation. And
thank you very much.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And Ms. Backus, the chair has a question.
Yes.
What is the date and location of this year's auto show?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. So we will be in the Minneapolis Convention Center from March 9th through 17th, and I believe those EVs will be available most days for the test drive, but I can follow up with folks, and if you'd like to do anything behind the scenes, be happy to orchestrate that. So,
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Mr. Chair, is that a field trip for this committee since we're going to be out and about?
Depends how many bills we have. Right. Maybe we'll celebrate the end of bill deadline.
Oh, interesting idea, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Backus. Our next testifier is Finn McGarity from Move Minnesota. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Finn McGarity. I am an organizer here to testify on behalf of Move Minnesota. I want to thank you for having me here today. I know time is short, so I promise not to belabor on about the overwhelming consensus within the scientific community about regarding the validity of climate change. I do, however, think it's important to reference two reports, the first being the very sobering UN climate report that was released in October of 2018. The climate report detailed what global climate crisis will look like as early as 2040 if we do not take major steps to reverse emission trends. The second we already heard testimony on, that was from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, citing that transportation is now the leading cause of greenhouse gas emissions here in Minnesota. As an organizer, I spend quite a bit of my time having conversations with Minnesotans across the state, a lot of whom are transit riders, and I have heard overwhelming support for electrification and greater investment in multimodal transportation. Climate change often is a common denominator behind that support. This last December, the Met Council and Metro Transit took a visionary step forward when they announced they would accelerate their plans for electrification by 2022, funding permitted. Meanwhile, Metro Transit still remains chronically underfunded, and insufficient service and fare hikes have contributed to ridership decline. Minnesotans need clean, affordable, and accessible transportation options that make our lives easier and are easier to access. A lot of folks are tired of spending over an hour in traffic. They are tired of a two-hour transit commute and the anxiety of maybe not making that last bus home. 2040 will also be the year our metropolitan region is anticipating a growth of around 800,000 new residents. In order to support Minnesota's growing population, investment in clean, public, and multimodal transportation now will be necessary to mitigate climate change, support our dynamic economy, and keep communities connected. We as a state and as citizens need to address climate change. And while it is evident that transportation is currently a major part of the problem, we have a transformative opportunity to champion investment and shift transportation towards a part of the solution. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Garrity. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the UN climate report, and I don't know which. Is that the exact official name? And there's so many reports out.
Yes, it was a climate report by the UN that was released in October of 2018. So it was a panel of over 90 scientists. I do not have the exact name of that report, but I would be happy to send it over to your office.
Right. And Mr. Chair, I mean, there are several, you know, major agencies, the U.S. Global Climate Assessment, that kind of thing, that are producing reports. And I'm concerned, and because I'm reading, that some of the baseline projections that they use are actually focused on a worst-case scenario in terms of the impact of a no-action plan on climate. I mean, how regularly do you go to the science and really look at it and look at all the different critiques that are out there? Because it does seem to me that everything here is based on what could potentially be, you know, corrupt data.
I appreciate your question, Representative Runbeck. I myself do look to the science. Before I was employed at Move Minnesota, I worked at Clean Water Action. I've been a passionate environmentalist. I do appreciate your concern about the sensationalization of the worst case scenario, but what we do know is that climate change is real and that carbon emissions are contributing to that. Whether a global climate crisis will happen in 2040 or 2050, I don't think that can be guaranteed, but we know it's a problem, and there's general consensus that we need to take action to solve it.
Well, Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. You know, I find it interesting that the International Panel on Climate Change in the year 1999, I think, projected that the temperature range would be 1.5 to 4.5 degrees Celsius increase. And here we are 20 years later, and their latest report has no change in their projections. So, you know, in terms of climate models, computer models telling us really where we're going, I don't think we know any more than we did 30 years ago. So I'll just leave it at that. But, I mean, I think we have to be continue to realize that science doesn't reach a consensus. Science is always studying and updating and, you know, making new and more current conclusions.
Thank you for that. I guess I would just add myself that, yes, I think we're up to something like 97-98% of scientists who study this have concluded that, you know, climate change is real, accelerating, and, you know, some of the data around temperature increase, some of the impacts around sea level rise, et cetera, are valid scientific conclusions. I think that's a pretty known, you know, consensus position in the scientific community. But thank you very much for your testimony, and we have a few more folks, and I appreciate everybody keeping to the time limits. Danielle Trajano from Minnesota 350. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. My name is Danielle Trajano, and I'm a community organizer with Minnesota 350. We're a climate justice group that's driven by volunteers throughout Minnesota who are working on addressing climate change and centering the people who are most impacted by climate change at the heart of our solutions. Over the past year, a lot of my work has been focused on canvassing, and I've talked to over 600 Minnesotans about climate change, transportation, clean energy, and the things that are most important to them. I've talked to folks in Savage, which is where I grew up, and in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and Plymouth, Bloomington, Maple Grove. And what I noticed is that few people are debating if climate change exists. Most everyone agrees that something is happening with our climate, but there's a sense of hopelessness. What can we really do about climate change? And that's why we need leaders to step up and create policies that are going to prevent damage to our climate and protect future generations. Transportation, as you know, is the leading source of greenhouse gas emissions in our state. Not only are these emissions from transportation bad for our climate, but they're also toxic for our health. I, along with some volunteers, some of which are in the room today, have been talking to transit riders and getting their perspective on electrifying public transit. We asked people why investing in clean modes of transportation is important to them, and a lot of people have shared stories about having lung and heart problems and other health issues related to pollution and pollution from emissions from transportation. We had over 1,200 people sign our clean bus petition, and Metro Transit's announcement to electrify their bus fleet was inspiring and exciting for climate activists, transit riders, and young people, and Minnesotans with pollution-related health problems alike. So that's why I'm asking you as leaders and decision makers to create and support policy that invests in cleaner modes of transportation, like money, putting money into infrastructure for electric vehicles and fully funding public transportation needs both in the metro and greater Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Ms. Trajano, any questions? Thank you. Our next testifier is Ashley Lotzer. Welcome to the committee. And I have had the pleasure of teaching a class at the University of Minnesota the last several years. And Ms. Lotzer is one of my former students, and she's a star student. So welcome. Thank you so much for coming to the committee. Welcome. Please state your name for our record.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hornstein and committee members. My name is Ashley Lotzer. I am a student at the University of Minnesota. I'm originally from the Burnsville-Eagan area. My major is in urban studies with a focus on transportation, a minor in sustainability. Normally when I tell people that long title, they say, well, what the heck does that mean? I say, I want to go fix public transportation. Instantly, people give me various things that need to be fixed. They ask, can you make the buses be on time? Can you put my bus stop back? Can you make them cleaner? Can you make them less noisy? The list goes on. My answer is always, I have no power to do that, but funding does. Many people care about the transportation system, but for many reasons are very unhappy with it. They feel helpless because they can't change anything, especially the people that have to rely on this for their daily lives, such as myself. They may not be able to change much, but this committee can. Funding for electric buses should be a major priority due to transportation being the largest greenhouse gas emitter in Minnesota. I urge you to prioritize funding to make our transportation system safer, cleaner, and more reliable for the people of Minnesota. doing electric buses would solve many problems that I hear from regular people on a daily basis. Every Minnesotan deserves clean transportation options. I kept it short. Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you so much. Any questions for Ms. Lutzer? Okay. Appreciate your being here. Our next testifier is Joshua Hodek from the Sierra Club North Star Chapter.
Good afternoon, Chair Horstein and committee members. My name is Joshua Hodek, representing the 85,000 members and supporters of the Minnesota North Star Chapter. We are members that live in every county of greater Minnesota, almost every suburb and big city of our state. Today is a special opportunity to profess our love for two things: climate action and clean transportation. There's a theme here. As you already heard, Minnesota has this issue of greenhouse gas emissions originating from transportation. Vehicle pollution is also a public health crisis in Minnesota, disproportionately affecting communities of color and low-income communities in congested areas and near our highways. We need action now to fully fund clean transportation options like transit, electric vehicles, bicycling and walking connections, and in addition to fixing our crumbling roads and bridges. Well, the good news is that many of our trips that we take on a daily basis are short. These short trips are the most polluting trips. Before the mission controls of our internal combustion engine vehicles are working most efficiently. But these trips are also the easiest to convert to clean options like transit, bicycling, and walking. So the problem here is funding. Fixing and upgrading our transportation system can't be met with current funding levels. Each year we delay, the cost to taxpayers increases. And there's many opportunities out here to leverage that we don't believe we're doing well on. The Federal Transit Administration's low or no emission grant program is out there. It provides states and local governments funding for procuring zero emission transit buses, as well as acquisition and leasing the required supporting charging facilities. Utilities are supportive, and I need to speed up, so I'm going to skip down to the fact that, back to my love theme on this special day, that Minnesota voters love the idea of prioritizing statewide investments in sustainable transportation options. I hope you've seen that the Public Opinion Strategies statewide poll found that 75% of Minnesotans support making additional new investments to expand and improve transit, and 68% want you to pass a transportation funding package that funds safety improvements for the cleanest and healthiest ways of getting from point A to point B, which is walking and bicycling. So we urge you to support Minnesotans' love for clean transportation options for everyone, and please demonstrate this support by passing new dedicated long-term funding this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Hodek? Okay. Representative Bernardi, sorry about that.
No, thank you. It'll give me just a moment, but Mr. Hodek, I thank you for your very heartwarming and love for this topic. It's been wonderful working with you on this, and I thank you for your leadership.
Thank you, Chair, Representative Bernardi and Chair. And I forgot to mention there is a little Valentine. I think that made it in your packet today.
Yes, so I appreciate
enjoy
it.
Your day.
Thank you very much. Next up is Dorian Grilly, and then I just want to give Mike Manziel a heads up that he's after Dorian.
Mr. Welcome Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. I'm here today to simply remind you that bicycling and walking is not the only solution to all that ails our culture and environment, but with a relatively modest investment, it could be a much bigger part of the solution. In 2008, the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group found that biking and walking will play a critical role in Minnesota's efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. They included a supply-side and a demand-side bike-walk action strategy in their report, and they found that those two in combination were the fifth best solution or the fifth most productive solution in reducing greenhouse gases. Sorry, I've edited this significantly. To today's top, one estimate that I've found is that driving a kilometer in a car releases 271 grams of carbon dioxide. A diesel bus releases about 100 grams per passenger per kilometer, and biking and walking releases none. Or if you count food production, 16 grams per kilometer for biking and a little more for walking, so almost nothing. Nearly half of all trips taken nationwide are less than 3 miles, as Joshua mentioned, a very bikeable distance. We simply need to develop a strategy for replacing many of those short trips with biking and walking. Jim Oberstar worked to prove that mode share change could be done in the United States more than a decade ago by including funding for non-motorized transportation pilot projects in his transportation bill. Project invested a little more than $30 million in Minneapolis and its surrounding communities and got significant mode share shift. Really? I've included this map in the handout, and it's self-explanatory. So it just shows that people all around the state are concerned about this, or leaders all around the state are concerned about this.
Thank you, Mr. Grilley. And I've been asking Mr. Grilley. I had heard former Congressman Oberstar of blessed memory say something about this mode shift, but I never found the exact data, so you finally got that for me today, so I appreciate that.
Can I, Mr. Chair, a quick aside on that is that the mode share shift actually from 2 to 5% represents about a shift from 750,000 to work trips by bicycle to 2.3 million. So it was a significant investment of $30 million, but it also produced some significant results.
Fantastic. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Grilley?
Just a Representative really
Runbeck, of course.
Thank
Absolutely.
You, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Grilley, and so you've looked on this issue many, many, many years, and, you know, it's still out for debate just how many parts per million of CO2, you know, are optimal. So do you have a number?
I don't. You know, I am not a climate scientist. Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, my simple answer is that bicycling and walking produces none, and that it's good for many of the things that ail us, not just transportation and congestion.
Right, and Mr. Chair and Mr. Grilley, we agree.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Manziel, and then after that, Bob again, Carney Jr. And then we'll wrap up with Ms. Nairn from the automobile manufacturers.
Mr. Chair, members of this committee, my name is Dr. Mike Menzel. I'm a physician that's practiced in Minnesota for over 34 years. And I'm a co-founder of an organization, Minnesota-based, called Health Professionals for a Healthy Climate. And we advocate for the health of our patients who are being impacted by climate change. So transportation is a major source of air pollution. Transportation is a big greenhouse gas contributor that's holding us back from achieving cleaner air, according to a recent MPCA report. Emissions from diesel and gas vehicles have been linked to adverse health impacts and are a significant contributor to global warming. Climate change is impacting our health now, and it acts as a threat multiplier by exacerbating transportation-related air pollution. The greenhouse gases from transportation are heat-trapping gases, which do exacerbate climate change. Heat stress and air pollution are but two climate-induced stressors to health that have been shown to cause premature death in persons with pre-existing heart and lung disease. People in low-income communities and communities of color are disproportionately affected by the higher levels of air pollution as they tend to live near freight centers or heavily traveled roadways. Tailpipe pollutants from vehicle exhaust can affect more than just your lungs. It poses health risks at every stage of life and even can cause premature death. These pollutants, such as nitrogen and sulfur oxides, ozone and particulate matter, all these are known to inflame and constrict the airways, causing coughing, shortness of breath. They can aggravate asthma, emphysema, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And they can also make the lungs more susceptible to infection. Particulate matter 2.5 microns can also is known that it can pass from the lungs into the bloodstream and create an inflammatory reaction in the coronary arteries, resulting in severe or fatal heart disease. Transportation powered by clean energy instead of oil and gas, it reduces pollution and can strengthen the electric grid. There are many co-benefits to a cleaner transportation system, including the use of fuel-efficient and electric vehicles, public transportation powered by electricity that we've heard about, and, of course, zero emissions by walking and biking that we just heard about. Climate Action for Health includes supporting zero-emission vehicle technologies for all modes of transportation, and these will be a better alignment of transportation investments.
Dr. Menzel, if you could wrap up, that would be great.
Okay. So we need the right policies and investments from all levels of government to accelerate the transition to a zero-emissions transportation system. There are exceptional opportunities to advance health, and I'll close by wishing you all happy Valentine's Day and hope that you'll feel the bipartisan love today.
Thank you. Thank you. We feel it every day in the Transportation Committee, but thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Menzel. Bob Carney, welcome back to the committee. You're a regular here, so it's good to see you again. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob again, Carney Jr., a registered lobbyist for We the People, also president of Transit Revolution, a public benefit corporation. We've got some good news. I've got a handout here called Global Warming Solved. And it has two illustrations on the back. I'm just briefly going to explain how this thing works. There's a place called Lagrange Point 1 in space. It's 1 million miles from the Earth, 92 million miles from the Sun. If you put something there, the gravity of the Earth and the Sun offset. So it just keeps orbiting between the Earth and the Sun. And so if you put some shade there, it reduces total energy reaching the Earth and it causes global cooling. So I've got a plan to put two tethered mirrors out there, giant pairs of mirrors, lots of them. And the first mirror reflects sunlight all radiation to the second mirror. The second mirror redirects it to the Earth and targets solar panels. You can put a third mirror in geosynchronous orbit, and you can run solar panels at night. This will pay for itself. And because you have two mirrors between the Earth and the Sun, one of them is blocking the sunlight, and you have a 50% reduction in global warming for that area covered. Now, there's a Dr. Roger Angel who's done research on this. So he's a MacArthur Grant winner. So this is a proven concept of reducing radiation. So I want you to know that I'm going to be presenting this to the legislature going forward, but the implication for transit and transportation is that there really isn't any pressure on us to have an arbitrary date by which we must reduce emissions. That's what the bottom line is for this. And I look forward to talking with everybody about this. Happy Valentine's Day. Don't want to forget that. And my challenge to everybody is show me where I'm wrong. This is a scientific theory. I've got a core in physics from McAllister. This is science. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Carney? Thank you. And our last testifier is Ms. Sandy Naren from the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Sandy Naren. I'm with the firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I'm here today on behalf of the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers. The Alliance is a trade association of 12 of the largest car manufacturers in the world. And last evening I received from them a handout that is in your folder that I think gives you just a 10,000-foot level overview of what a number of the manufacturers are doing right now on trying to electrify their all of their vehicles. Some of the examples that are on this sheet, Volvo says by model year 2019, 100% of their vehicles are going to be operated with electric motors. Toyota says by 2025, every Toyota and Lexus in the world that they manufacture is going to be electrified. General Motors is spending billions of dollars trying to come out with two long-range electric vehicles in the next 10 to 12 months. They are in a dead heat competition with Tesla right now, trying to meet some of their goals. Ford has invested $11 billion in R&D right now on electric vehicles. So car manufacturers are taking this seriously. They are spending a lot of money and research trying to work out a lot of the chinks that are present and a lot of the problems that are present with electric vehicles. Obviously, range is a big problem in many areas, making sure the cars will go far enough. Infrastructure being present also is very, very important in order to bring cars to different states. And, of course, weather does matter quite a bit. Some of you may have seen the article in the Strib a week or so ago that AAA did a study on five different electric vehicles and tested them in what they called hot and cold weather. And to them, cold weather was 20 degrees. There was a 41% loss of power in the electric vehicles in 20-degree weather. So we encourage the state to invest in some of these things, to get state and local government fleets electrified, to start offering more consumer education, possibly rebates and other kinds of incentives to purchase these vehicles. And, of course, infrastructure is most important of all. Manufacturers will be glad to come back at another time if you want more detail from any of them on what they're all doing on this. And, of course, I don't want to fail to mention that there's already about 480 models for sale in this country that get more than 30 miles per gallon. And over the last 12 years, conventional vehicles have become more efficient by over 30% also.
Thank
which
you,
is folks. Why gas tax is down in many,
you.
Many states.
Thank you. And I think just a couple of quick comments. I mean, your last statement, I think, you know, is a reminder that the California Clean Cars initiative is an important one, and states can adopt that. But I also think that your testimony and, Ms. Backus is important, particularly in light of the data that Mr. Kukkonen presented about, you know, the need for more options and models and sheer number of electric vehicles. So I think that's something that the manufacturers and the dealers can work on. So with that, members, I just have a quick announcement. Our next meeting is going to be Tuesday, the 19th. We do plan on hearing Representative Hansen's Minlar's bill, deficiency bill, and we will be welcoming amendments to that bill. That's House File 861, and we may add some other bills as well, but my sense is that will probably take a while to get through. And we will not have a meeting, again, repeating, no meeting a week from today, but we will be having our first field hearing on Friday the 22nd up in St. Cloud, and we will be touring the new Flyer facility. So, and keep your eyes on emails for future meeting times and locations. And with that, members, we are adjourned.